Good evening, and thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the Arts Rational on Co-op Radio 102.7 CFRO for Thursday, November 19th. I'm Megan Turnbull, and as usual, I'm here with Jerry Kowalenko and Steve Rosenberg. We have a full and exciting show tonight. Gabriella DeLuca from Headlines Theatre is here to talk to us about a theatre project that takes a unique look at Vancouver's homelessness issue. Our very own Steve Rosenberg has an exciting new film event to tell us about. Dancers Day Halesic, Meredith Kalaman, and Joyce Rosario are in studio to chat about their touring dance troupe. And up first is a phone interview with Adrian Wong to tell us about Wrecking Ball, a theater production that takes critical aim at the recent funding cuts to the arts. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Jerry's interview with Adrian Wong.
So easy to change. Can't like who I want. No, that's not true. I do know. Just can't figure out how to pin down. There will be no
is the band 07 with the song Swing off the album Yeah Ghost. And if you like that, you're in luck because 07 is coming to the Commodore on December 13th. And Jerry, we're over to you with our first guest tonight.
Yes, thanks, Megan. And folks, you are listening to CFRO, which means Community Free Radio Organization. And at the other end of the line, we hope, we've got our fingers crossed, is Adrian Wong, who I found out in chatting to her and about her as a prairie girl who once, I guess, had too much of those cold winters on the other side of the Rockies, moved to Vancouver. She's a performer, writer, and artist. She's currently the co-artistic director of New World Theatre, who are a local theatre company, whose many accomplishments include productions like Ali and Ali and The Axis of Evil, the award-winning musical adaptation of Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, which really had to be seen to be believed. It was wonderful. And Adrian is also an actress who is the lead in a play called My Name is Rachel Corrie that was a big hit a year or so ago at the Push Festival. So welcome to the Arts Rational, Adrian. Are you there?
Hi, Jerry. I'm right here.
Fabulous. We did make the connection, and we're here to talk to you about a big arts event. Someone said possibly the biggest and most significant art event of this year, 2009. It's being held this coming Monday, November the 23rd. It's called the Wrecking Ball, I think. And what's this name, Wrecking Ball? I mean, where did it come from? What does it signify about the event?
Well, the Wrecking Ball is a movement of a type of performance show that's been going on across Canada for the past couple of years. It started off in Ontario with some artists who wanted more theater in politics and more politics in theater. So we hosted here in Vancouver our first Wrecking Ball in October 2008, and that was galvanized around the federal election and the anyone but the Conservatives. That message we were trying to get out. And we felt like it had a lot of success. And so this past year in September, when the provincial budget came down that featured some draconian cuts to the arts and other social services organizations, we decided that it was time to organize another Wrecking Ball. And you know what Wrecking Balls do, they take things down with the hope of building up something better in the place of.
Okay, now, this event, is it all about politics, or will people be entertained?
Well, you know, it is an advocacy event, but really it's also a celebration of our community. So we've invited some leading playwrights from across Canada to create work. So, you know, Daniel McIver, Linda Griffith, Mark Laren Young, these are all big names in Canadian theatre. They've all written short pieces. Some are, you know, I haven't actually seen them, but we're, you know, everything's in process, moving really quickly, but we're looking for some comedy, some satirical pieces as well. There's going to be some out-and-out rants, and I think there's also going to be lots there for everyone in terms of theater. But there's also music, too. The Carnival Band is playing, and Jim Burns is our musical guest.
Wow, well, that sounds great. So it's a, you know, sort of something socially productive, but at the same time, culturally stimulating, right?
Definitely. It's a chance for us to celebrate the strength in our community.
And it's being held Monday the 23rd, this coming Monday. Where? And where can people get information about the lineup, tickets, that sort of thing?
The show is Monday the 23rd at 8 p.m. at the Vogue Theatre in Vancouver. Tickets are by donation at the door. So we'll be passing a hat, but you can get in for free. And the tickets are available first come, first serve. The website where folks can go to grab more information is the stopbccuts.ca/thewreckingball.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, these cuts, how much money? I mean, there's been quite a bit of stuff in the press. Those of us some way vaguely connected to the arts community are aware. How much money are we talking about, and what's the impact on arts groups?
Well, I've got some statistics here in front of me. So in total, between the arts and culture legislated allocation, the BC Arts and Culture Endowment, the BC Gaming Commission, the 08-09 budget was $47.675 million.
Okay.
Over the next 3 years, they're going to take us down to $3.675 million. That's over a 90% cut in 3 years. Now, 90% is high, but this is still only 1/20th of 1% of the total provincial budget. So while it's not going to be a big drop in the budget bucket, for us, it's a decimating cut. And it's not just the arts and culture who are being cut. Through the BC Gaming Commission, the cuts to those services grants, we're talking about health organizations, education. It's an unprecedented attack on civil society in places where people gather for reasons other than making profit.
Well, now, the often people think, well, art cuts to the arts. You know, I don't go to the ballet. I don't really, you know, go out that much. There might not be much of an impact, but... what will happen, for example, to ticket prices for people who want to go to the symphony, want to go to the ballet, that sort of thing. And I think you mentioned an example of something that's happening with a local company named Battery Opera.
That's right. You know, the costs are going to get passed on to the end users, which are the audience, the ordinary, everyday people. And so ticket prices will likely go up if this happens.
And it won't.
Yes, that's what we're working for, is that it won't happen. Battery Opera, for instance, is a show I'm working on right now called Lives Were Around Me. They have done some calculations and figured out how much it would cost to put this show on without any government subsidy. And to regain that, to create that budget for themselves using box office only, they needed to charge $267.67 per ticket.
Wow, compared to what would it be now?
It would be $20.
Well, I guess a steep increase.
It is a steep increase. And you know, it's not just ticket buyers, but BC has some of the highest percentage of people who are employed in the arts and culture sector. This is more than forestry right now. So we're talking about jobs. We're talking about people's jobs at a time of economic hardness. And we're talking about people not being able to feed their families. So, yes, you know, there's public access to the arts that's really important. There's artistic expression, which is crucial to free speech and democracy. But there's also just people trying to pay their rent and get their groceries. And those people, you know, the individual artists who rely on companies to hire them, they're out in the cold right now. There's already been organizations. The Helen Pitt Gallery has already closed its doors.
Wow.
So now, that's going to keep happening.
There has been some luck, I must say, in amongst the gloominess of the whole situation. There was recently, this issue came before a committee of the provincial legislature, and I think people were quite hopeful, right?
Yes, that's right. The BC's, the Select Standing Committee on Finance just did their tour of the province, which they do every year to get feedback on the budget. And we worked really hard to mobilize artists and our supporters across the province to go out to those meetings and talk about what the impact of these cuts had on themselves as individuals and also on their communities. And the result of that is in their report to the Select Standing Committee has recommended to the BC government that they restore funding to the 0809 levels. This is like a meaningful thing because it's NDP and Liberal MLAs who stand on that committee, but it still hasn't been passed by legislature. So we're still keeping the pressure on. We have to keep you know, it sounds like it's the same old story, but we have to keep writing our letters, keep writing
okay.
The MLA, Colin Hanson.
Right.
You know.
Now, in addition to the wrecking ball on Monday, which is fun and a little bit of politics and protesting, what can citizens, people like me, people like the folks in our studio, what can we do? Where can we get more information, you know, over and beyond wrecking ball to sort of try and take some action?
Well, the Alliance for Arts and Culture here in Vancouver is a key site. They're really a nexus for a lot of organizing that's happening around the cuts. And they have a sense of what's going on in the city, what different actions are happening. And then another place that people can go is to Google Stop BC Cuts.
Okay.
And you'll get yourself to a website, Stop BC Arts Cuts. And
okay.
There's a website there that is speaking out against the cuts. Gives you a lot of background. I know I've gone through the numbers really fast.
And things to do, hopefully.
And things to do. And, you know, we've got support from pulp workers. They're sending us pictures with people standing on, you know, on the floor with their hard hats on with signs saying pulp workers love BC music. We've got people sending northern miners are supporting us. So it's really important for us, too, at this point to be reaching out in solidarity to our fellows in other social services agencies, because we're all in it together right now.
Great. Well, you know, it sounds great. Once again, the event is Wrecking Ball, and where is it being held? Tell us quickly again where to get tickets, that sort of thing.
The Wrecking Ball is at November 23rd, this Monday, at the Vogue Theater. Tickets are free at the door, and you can go to stopbcartscots.com to find more information.
That's great, and thanks, Adrian. Now, you're with New World Theatre. In addition to all of these kinds of things that you're working with, what's next for you, and is there any theatre or art going on around town that you think we should all pay some attention to?
Well, the New World Theater, we're in developing our sequel to Ali and Ali and the Axis of Evil. So the next one is called Ali 7, Hey Brother or Sister, Can You Spare Some Hope and Change? And that'll be at the Kulch in April 2010. But right now I'm working on that show with Battery Opera, The Lives Were Around Me. And, you know, if you don't have $267 to drop on some art, you can also attend the show by donation. So we play every Tuesday night between now and December 15th. And if you go down to the Alibi Room after 5:30, there's a young woman there who will be able to hook you up with the show. It's a very intimate guided tour of the downtown east side.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Adrienne, thanks so much for taking some time to come out and talk to us. But we have some folks, a full room of people involved in arts organizations, and we thought you might like to hear, they might like to tell us briefly, what's the impact? For example, Gabrielle DeLuca, who's sitting straight across from me, the publicist for Headlines Theatre, what's going to happen to your company? What are the impacts of these proposed cuts on Headlines Theatre?
Well, we've actually been really lucky this year. We were one of the groups that had the three-year gaming grant, so that was reinstated. Next year and the following year, however, we're definitely going to start seeing problems in our finances. There's going to be a significant cut to our funding, and we're actually having to do staff cuts. And staff having to take on more duties because of that. So it's this year we're okay, but it's going to start hitting us next year.
Now, we have some folks from the dance community. I mean, are there impacts on the world of dance from these proposed cuts?
Yeah, my name's Day Helisik. I'm co-artistic producer of Movent, which is a dance company here in Vancouver. And we were one of the unlucky ones where we were cut from our gaming funding. We are on annual funding, so that represents a loss of a creation for me this season. So I will not be creating a new work, and that's a pretty big impact in terms of our company activity over the season. So we're already feeling that impact of the arts cuts.
And so hopefully, you know, all of us, if possible, we'll be down at Wrecking Ball on Monday, November the 23rd, at the Vogue Theatre here, admission by donation to sort of, you know, get enthused, have some entertainment, enjoy a bit of arts and culture, and I guess move on to making sure that that legislative committee has some real influence on the Premier, the Cabinet, and all the rest, so these things might hopefully get reversed.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Jerry.
Yes,
thanks,
Jerry.
And thank you, Adrienne, and the best of luck with New World Theatre, Ali and Ali, and we'll hopefully see you on Monday evening.
You bet.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to take a short break now, and we'll be right back for a little bit more with Gabriella. Be back shortly.
Headlines Theatre presents After Homelessness, a play by people who know what they're talking about because they've been homeless. This play asks the questions about people living in unsafe structures with no social support, about SROs and money. It asks about expectations, about safety, frustration, and why society's hands feel tied. Director David Diamond leads a cast of five in the story of affordable and safe housing in Metro Vancouver, created and performed by people living issues of homelessness and mental health. The play draws on real-life experiences to produce affecting performances. After Homelessness is a dynamic forum theater. Audience members can yell stop during the show and take the place of any cast member on stage. This lively audience interactive play runs in Vancouver at the Firehall Arts Center, November 21st to 29th, and in New West at the Holy Trinity Cathedral, December 1st to 6th. Visit HeadlinesTheatre.com for more information.
Please hang up and try your call again. If you'd like a...
Sorry about that delay. Okay, we are back. You're listening to The Arts Rationale on 102.7 FM. And Jerry has another interview all set to go.
Yes, well, we've spoken to Gabriella a few moments ago about arts clubs, cuts, and now we're on to Headlines Theatre. And Gabriella, well-educated young woman, Langara, St. Francis Xavier in Nova Scotia. You've worked with, I think, Cirque du Soleil. You've done some work with the Push Festival, which is really one of the best arts events ever to hit the West Coast here. And currently, you're the publicist with Headlines Theatre,
right?
Who are this award-winning. I think they've gotten Governor General's Awards. The Executive Director, Artistic Director David Diamond, I think, has received the Order of Canada. They've been around quite a while.
Yes, we're 28 years old.
Wow. I wish I were. And one of the things about Headlines Theatre is a couple of years ago, we have the local theatre awards, and you know, Headlines Theatre, for a piece called Practicing Democracy, which was a lot about politics and social issues, managed to beat the Playhouse, the Arts Club, and Bard on the Beach, and win the local theatre prize for the best theatre production in the Lower Mainland. So, you know, the organization's no slouch. Now, you're here to tell us about something called After Homelessness, which is, what's that all about?
Well, it's a play looking at issues of affordable housing and safe, supported housing in Metro Vancouver. And we've had the people that are in the cast and help create the play are people who have experienced homelessness. So it's very hands-on and very real.
And so... Okay, this comes out of something I was talking, I checked your website for Headlines Theatre, and that Headlines Theatre works in a rather sort of unique way in terms mm-hmm. of staging all that work for the last 28 years, including After Homelessness. And it's, what, Theatre of the Oppressed? What's that all about?
Well, Theatre of the Oppressed is Augusto Boal. He was a Brazilian theatre genius.
Okay.
Who created Theatre of the Oppressed. It's looking at social issues and trying to somehow change them. And David actually studied under him for a number of years, and they were very good friends, and Augusto passed away this past year, and David is continuing on in his memory.
Now, you know, we're probably, all of us here are against homelessness. I mean, who's in favor of homelessness? And, you know, and everybody wants everyone to be happy, and everybody wants everyone to live in the best of all possible worlds. But I guess, you know, after homelessness, the social issue, important as it is, I guess what I sometimes think is, you know, there's Wrecking Ball, which is great. Now we have After Homelessness. I mean, it all sounds very serious, very politically important, but possibly not too entertaining to someone who's, you know, mired themselves with horrible work all day. What makes this move from politics to art?
Well, I know what you mean. Like, we're dealing with a heavy issue, and it doesn't come across as something that you're going to necessarily
have
a few laughs at. But I can tell you that I have had a few laughs. I've seen it, and I've laughed quite a few times. And it's not, it's a heavy issue, but we're still theater. It's
okay.
Fun, you know. It's audience interactive. So once we run it through once, the play gets run through a second time, where anyone in the audience who understands an experience that the character is having can yell stop and jump on stage and take the place of that character and try and somehow change the outcome of the play. So with all these, you know, in the fire hall, we're going to have 136 extras, if you
okay.
will, who can take the place of a character, totally
wow.
change the play around, and add their own perspective on it. So with all of this, it's still theater.
Okay.
You don't know what you're going to get when an audience member comes on stage, and it can be funny, it can make you cry. It's pretty much every aspect of the spectrum you can imagine.
Wow, After Homelessness is going to be at the Fire Hall.
Yes.
When does it start? Where can people get more information? How much are tickets?
Well, it opens this Saturday, November 21st, and runs at the Fire Hall until the 29th.
Okay.
And then we actually move to New Westminster to the Holy Trinity Cathedral, and that runs December 1st through 6th. Tickets for the Fire Hall show are available at the Fire Hall box office.
Okay.
And they're $10. You can reach them at 604-689-0926.
Okay.
And tickets for the New West shows are available through Headlines Theatre, and you can call us at 604-871-0508, and tickets are also $10.
Right, and if you go into Google or whoever they are and type Headlines Theatre, you should get to a site that will give you much of the same information,
oh,
right?
Yes.
In terms of tickets, that
oh,
sort
yeah.
of thing.
And background information on the show and on the company as well.
Right. So everyone who goes down to the fire hall conceivably is part of the action.
Everyone is. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, for example, I could go down there, sit around for a while, and get up and take over the lead role?
You could.
Wow. Well,
you could be.
Only once, or could I do it two or three times?
Well, we'd like to have everyone have a try.
Okay, sure.
But if you're really persistent and really know what you're doing, yeah, we'd love to have you come up more than once.
Well, I don't know if I know what I'm doing, but I'm persistent. No.
And that's the thing. Like, every night, you know, you get a different audience every night, so every night the performance is a little bit different.
Wow. Have you ever had at Headlines Theater somebody who's showed up every night and decided to use the thing as a venue for their own ideology?
Well, this is my first production with Headlines, and I know that there have been people that have come up, come to different performances a number of times. Mm-hmm. And I think David, who's our artistic director, he also acts as Joker on stage.
Okay.
So he helps people come on and ask them questions about their intervention, which is what we call it. And I'm pretty sure he's very good at handling the crowd.
Okay.
So would be keeping people off that probably shouldn't be on.
Wow. Now, you know, I will say I did a couple of years ago took all the buses and transits and passes out to Surrey, and so I think a Headlines Theater production dealing with Indo-Canadian gang violence, and I must say, you know, it was pretty heavy duty, pretty serious, but it was entertaining, so people don't have to worry about, you know, sort of that it's like going to some kind of secular church for days on end. Okay, there's After Homelessness going on for a couple of weeks. What's up for Headlines Theater and for yourself after that?
Well, we're right now in 2 years of production on a piece called, that we're working title is Us and Them.
Okay.
When we're looking at kind of the need for society to create an us and a them, and how really they're, when you think about it, that there really is just an us and what that means. And so next year is very much discussions and talking about, just with the community and people all over the world, about what it means and how Us and Them is created. And then in 2011, for our 30-year anniversary, we're hoping to put on a big production, but it depends on the arts cuts and whatnot.
Oh, I'm sure you'll be successful.
Well, fingers crossed.
Now, Gabriella, since you're involved in the theater, all those sorts of wonderful things, is there anything floating around town, dance, theater, a film that you think that everyone should be paying some attention to? Of course, along with After Homelessness.
Well, actually, there's a show tomorrow night at the Biltmore, Thunder Heist. They're a group out of Montreal, and they're amazing. So tickets are very close to sold out. People should definitely try and get down there, though, if you get the chance.
Okay, well, look. Any last word?
Come see the show. It's going to be very fun and very amazing, and it'll teach you something.
And it's going to be held where?
The Fire Hall Arts Center, November 21st to 29th, and the Holy Trinity Cathedral in New West, December 1st through 6th.
Great. Thank you so much. We were talking, and in person, to Gabriella DeLuca, who's the publicist for Headlines Theater. You are listening to CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver and at various other cable frequencies throughout British Columbia and northwestern Washington State. It's about 9:29, and I think a little break, and we'll be back.
We'll be
with
back
more
with my
fabulous
chat.
Stuff.
We'll be back with my chat with Steve in just about a minute.
Great.
Join Urban Inc. for an Indigenous Crossroads Laboratory, Sunday, November 22nd at 7 p.m. The collab will explode with contemporary and historic collisions of language, ancestry, and ceremony. Using Urban Inc.'s personal legacy creation process, 18 artists of Aboriginal and diverse backgrounds from across the country will plant the first seeds for an exciting new cross-disciplinary performance work. Join in November 22nd for post-showing talkback sessions to piece out the collab creation compounds. Located at 112 West Hastings at the W2 building, November 22nd at 7 p.m. For more details, contact Siobhan Barker at urbaninc.ca or 604-692-0885. That's 604-692-0885.
caretaker, cause he was a maker. Looked at me and laughed, took another sip from his glass. He said, open up your ears and eyes. You put a big bird in a small cage and I'll sing you a song.
That's the tail end of Patrick Watson singing A Big Bird in a Small Stage. He will be at the Vogue Theater on December 10th, and if you like that song, you won't be disappointed. So those of you who listen to our show regularly will know Steve Rosenberg as our insightful film critic. However, what you might not know is that besides having terrific taste in and knowledge about movies, he's also a talented filmmaker and teacher in his own right. Steve's latest project and passion is a nonprofit film school that takes an innovative approach and combines film instruction with community outreach. The truly outstanding school is called Pull Focus, and I'll let Steve explain it in further detail. Welcome on the other side of the desk tonight, Steve.
Yes.
What can you tell us about Pull Focus and how it's different from other film schools?
Well, having been through the film school process myself, I was a former graduate of Vancouver Film School, paid my $28,000 to spend a year learning about film. That was in the 90s. And then later, I was also a student at Ryerson. And film school, in general, does not guarantee you a job. It's this big notion that you get to a point in your life, and you think, what can I do you know, what can I do now? My life is not interesting. I want to be a filmmaker. That occurs to lots of people over the years.
Right.
And I myself have made films. It's very difficult to make a living as a filmmaker, as most actors end up waiting tables. Many, many filmmakers teach, and right. there are guest lectures, and there's instruction. But it doesn't have to be an all or nothing situation. One of the things that people do when they graduate film school at the beginning is they want to get their stuff on TV, and most often they end up in community TV. Now, one of the things that people find in community TV is that there's not really the creative autonomy that you kind of want. There's one person that has an agenda, and most of the people are gathered around the equipment. They're carrying things back and forth, and it's usually one or two people driving the show. What I wanted to do as a film school was involve the community. So how could I do that and get the community and filmmakers to actually achieve something that's beneficial for both?
Right.
So here's the pitch.
All right.
If you are, I have one group, which is a vegetarian group called Earth Save Society, and they're a group of vegetarians. They meet together, they eat all vegetarian food, and they have a campaign called Meatless Monday, which is if you don't eat meat for one day a week, you're sort of aware that, you know, you're transitioning towards plant food, and it's like not driving one day out of seven. It creates awareness around that.
Okay.
So they need some film content for their own fundraising purposes, for their community outreach. If they're going to go to a school or something of that nature and they want to facilitate a conversation, how else do you do so without, you know, with a piece of film? And it's said, I mean, Marshall McLuhan said this years ago, that films are the fresco of our the future generation, and he was a great prognosticator, because it seems that in our society, being film literate is perhaps just the same as being, you know, literate in reading or having knowledge of arithmetic and things of that nature. So this particular Meatless Monday, I don't see this as being a huge documentary.
Right.
But it does actually serve a purpose. And so for a beginning documentary filmmaker, they learn three-point lighting system, they learn interviewing techniques, and they are partnered with a group which can grow into a bigger documentary.
Right. So the film student has a chance to work with experts in the field.
Right.
And they're paired up, I guess, with a nonprofit, or how does that work?
Okay, so this is the fascist part of it. So you come to the school, and you must either have a concept for a project. If you don't have a concept where you're paired with, you know, somebody in the community, we are actually going to run a dance program as well later on. But supposing you don't have an idea and you can't search the universe for ideas, there's a list of 20 or 30 community partners that submit their pitch for a documentary. So we're getting lots of different pitches. It costs nothing for these people to get perhaps a documentary about their group, because this is great for fundraising. They have nothing to lose.
Right.
But what it does, it pairs potential filmmakers with people from the community. So if they click, they can make a short 8-minute film. It can be cut down to a 3-minute trailer, mm-hmm. or if it's rich, it could become a full documentary.
And what are some of the ways that you see the nonprofit organizations using the end result, the documentaries or the smaller little okay. film clips?
So in the summer, I did a pilot program with the Environmental Youth Association, and they're an environmental group that wants to get young people into, you know, enjoying being activists and relating to the environment. So they were putting living wall and community gardens in the downtown east side. So homeless people would have a place to plant tomatoes, to take care of a garden, and the youth were like trying to interest these people in doing this community garden. So the idea that it was all wrapped up in a film got people to sort of look around them and say, who's homeless? How can I relate to them? And it gave them like a common energy that they, you know, they felt very useful as an environmental somebody doing a project, and the film was the fruit. It ended up on Shaw TV.
Wow.
So they got their message out. They need funding as well. They need every organization, every nonprofit organization is cash strapped. And I guess if you're going to go to a party, there is the old, you know, you can have speeches, and they all, after a while, a speech, in many cases, it can be, you know, it's a very, a lot of times it's you are preaching about a singular message. What I don't like documentary filmmakers to do are infomercials.
Okay.
So the minute you hear a McDonald's jingle, you know you're being sold a hamburger. It's no longer music to you.
Right.
I feel the same way about teaching documentary. I think that you should expose the problems in an open-ended way. Let's see what the issues are. And then, you know, that's great to facilitate questions. And that's why film, when you go to a film festival, it's great because you have the director there. There's this interaction between the audience, the filmmaker. And in a small way, I wanted to recreate this on a semi-professional basis.
So this is a brand new school.
It's
and
a brand
program.
New school. I can't say that I'm the visionary that created all this because I actually saw this. This actually exists in New York City. It is called Barefoot Documentaries, and they actually train. They're a vision that I would love to do in 5 years. But if you're planning a trip to Sudan and you have a social activist idea and you want to be there for a holiday a little bit, and you also want to have somewhat of a film experience, they go, they take you on the beach for a week with your crew, then you go and you see what the issues are, and you work with NGOs, and you come back with a little film. They have tons of programs like that. Their website is filled with dreamy things that I was just so interested in. And I thought Vancouver could benefit with something like this.
Oh, definitely. So how can people find out a little bit more about it, both students and organizations that might be interested in getting involved?
Well, we're having an open house at Video Inn, which is at 1965 Main Street. That's December 1st, so that's on a Tuesday night, just before the Christmas season. I'm competing, I'm sure, with lots of Christmas parties. But on that night, it's going to be a lot of fun because, I don't know, have you ever heard what a pitch fest is?
No.
Okay, so people pitch their ideas. It's sort of like an American Idol concept, but without the nasty sort of put downs. So Meatless Monday person, for example, would get up and say, this is what I think would make a great film. And we would say, you know what, you need to flesh it out a bit because this is sort of like a 30-second, you know, bit part. If you want to do something of that nature, you need to build it around a character and so forth. But we're going to have a pitch fest, so we're going to match aspiring filmmakers, people that are ready to get into the industry, people from nonprofits that are willing to take the course as well, so they have an in-house. I'm sounding like an infomercial myself as I'm listening to myself. But
you're excited. That's a good thing.
I'm excited, and I think it's a great thing. And it's going to all happen at next Tuesday night from 7 to 9. So there'll be a bit of a presentation, and lots of nonprofits will be chatting about their worthy causes and their terrible cuts and things like that. And we're there to hear it and hear their ideas for films.
And is there a website?
There is a website. It's www.pullfocusfilmschool.com. Pull Focus Film School. And one more thing.
Yes?
Pull Focus. I'm wondering if anybody knows what Pull Focus is.
Does it have something to do with a camera?
Yes. Okay. It's a very common camera term. You go from blurry to focus.
Okay.
And that's a very dreamy sort of thing that you use with the camera. So hopefully we're pulling focus to lots of different issues.
Excellent. That's a good name for the school. Many meanings on many different levels there. Well, congratulations, Steve. That's fantastic. Best of luck with it, and thanks for taking the time to tell us all about it. We're going to have a little
pleasure, and thank you, Megan.
We're just going to have a little bit of music while we prepare for our final interview tonight, and we'll be back very shortly.
Yeah.
Well, it probably verges on criminal to fade out Duke Ellington, but I apologize to all those Duke Ellington fans. The reason I was playing that is because Dee Daniels is performing Duke Ellington songs at a fundraiser in support of the First United Church Mission, which serves Vancouver's downtown Eastside community, at St. Andrew's Wesley Church tomorrow night. So if you're a big Duke Ellington fan, or just like good music, or like to get out and support important causes, those are all good reasons to go and check that out tomorrow night. Our next three guests here are here with proof that the romance and mystery of the touring artist need not be reserved solely for musicians. Joyce Rosario is the executive director of a touring dance group called Made in BC. Joyce is here with two dancers from the tour, Day Halesik and Meredith Calaman, to tell us all about their recent adventures dancing across BC. Welcome, Joyce, Day, and Meredith. And
hello.
Thanks, hello to all of you, and thanks so much for waiting patiently throughout the show. I'm so excited that you're all here. We'll start with you, Meredith. As executive director, can you tell us a little bit more about Made in BC?
Oh, you probably meant me, Joyce.
Sorry, I did mean you, Joyce. My mistake.
Just a quick correction. Made in BC, we're not actually a touring group, but what we are is a provincial pilot program to get more contemporary dance touring around BC. There's quite a lot of really fantastic dance companies in Vancouver, based out of Vancouver and other places around BC, and there hasn't been a lot of opportunity, unless you're a ballet company, to kind of get around touring. So that's why we started. So we've been around since 2006. And what we do is work with artists and presenters. And the key thing about what we do is not only do we work with the artists and presenters to make connections, but we work within the communities to develop audiences for dance. So each of the presenters that we work with are able to hire what we call them, a dance outreach coordinator. Other people in other communities would call them like an animateur. But they do kind of outreach work to kind of make the soil ripe for dance. And then people like Day and Meredith do their magic.
And that was actually one of my questions when I was reading about all the different communities that you've danced in. I guess a big center like Vancouver would already have an audience that's used to coming out to dance. How were you received? How were the dance performances received in some of the smaller communities? Meredith.
First of all, I just wanted to say that Made in BC is one of BC's gems that we really, really hope will stay around for years to come. It would be just a crying shame if we ever had to lose it. I've been fortunate enough to have two tours throughout BC, one last year with Karen Jameson Dance Company, and this year with Day's company Movent, with a split bill with Tara Cheyenne Friedenberg. And there's so many things to do in Vancouver. You can go, there's at least two dance shows, plus the symphony, plus hockey games, all kinds of activities. You go to these smaller communities and they don't have those kind of options. So bringing art and dance to these people is huge. And we had some audiences that jumped to their feet at the end with standing ovations. And just really bringing that inspiration to those communities, I think, is the most important part of what Made in BC does.
Were you surprised by that? By sort of the openness and the excitement around it? Or just so there's an existing audience, I guess?
I mean, that definitely depends a lot on what the outreach, the community does to bring in the dance with the outreach worker. That makes a huge difference. But we were certainly blown away by our standing ovation in Salt Spring. It makes us really know that we've made a difference in a community in them getting to see dance, because those people might not get the chance to come down to Vancouver to see us perform.
Right. So this is really all about bringing the art form to different communities. But Day, when I was reading about it, I was thinking that this must be sort of a unique way of getting out and performing, as opposed to doing a show on the same stage for multiple nights, going out and sort of being on the road and doing different city every couple of nights. And what's that like as a dancer to go from city to city?
Well, it's definitely an adventure. Mm-hmm. I mean, on this particular tour, we visited seven communities, so we had seven different shows and seven different stages, and every time we jumped into a new theater, it was a new adventure. Our technical staff would recreate our show, which was full of different kinds of lighting looks, and we have a light set for Surge. So they would recreate the show no matter what the space looked like. Sometimes there were tiny theaters, sometimes they were huge cavernous spaces, and we would perform our show, and every audience would be different, and the reaction to our show would be different in every place. In Kitimat, for example, we had arrived the day that the day after the Eurocan cuts or the closure of that mill had happened. So that's a loss of over 500 jobs, and they were sort of reeling from that. From that news. Mm-hmm. And when we arrived, the high school had just been closed down due to the swine flu. So we walked into a town that was sort of very heavy with all of this news. And we had a wonderful show and a wonderful experience there because people came out and they wanted to be entertained and they wanted to perhaps escape the heavy feeling that that the town had at that time. And it was really a wonderful thing. They were excited to have us there. We had a great show, and we were happy that we were able to bring something different, a breath of fresh air, mm-hmm. A new feeling, maybe a lighter feeling to that community that was having such a hard time.
Oh, that's a really nice, that's a great experience. Actually, I read about the Kitimat show, Meredith, on your blog. So you kept a blog throughout the tour.
I did, yeah.
And what prompted you to do that?
This was actually something that Joyce said.
Joyce made you do it.
I did. It was, you know, we have our website, www.maidenbc.org, and it's kind of where we have all of our official information. And, you know, as the executive director, I get a lot of reports from people, and I get a lot of, like, insider bits about things that happen on tour, the beautiful pictures of stuff, the audiences, people's comments, and I really wanted to have an opportunity to kind of share that more directly with the general public. So we started a blog, and I asked Meredith to just blog about, to do one journal entry for each of the stops. So mm-hmm. she did that, and it was quite fun.
I thought, yeah, it was, at first I thought, well, what the heck do I write about? I didn't really want to focus about, you know, the aches and the woes and the pains of being a dancer. So on tour, the thing that becomes your focus is sleeping and eating. Mm-hmm. And when am I going to get that next meal, and am I going to get a good sleep tonight? And if I didn't, in the theater, where am I going to sleep? So we'd, you know, find the most obscure places or little carpet bits and wrap up in our jackets and our yoga mats and things. And so part of the tour was filled with that, and then the other part was the experiences of the communities. And it was neat, some of the presenters started to write comments on the blog about, I love hearing about food, and I'm like, that really is our reality, is what am I going to eat for breakfast before I go to the theater? I'm in the theater for 10 hours tomorrow. How am I going to get my meal? How am I going to make sure I can dance at 8 o'clock tomorrow?
Right. I think the other thing that I found so interesting about the blog is, like, we live in the most beautiful mm-hmm. province. Like, we get these shots of, you know, just the shot of the mountain pass as you're driving from Kitimat to wherever. And it's mm-hmm. just... It's breathtaking,
yeah.
You know? Like last year when you were in when you went from Prince Rupert to Haida Gwaii, I mean,
yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, so getting to, and it's just the community building was huge. We'd go into the theaters and they go, oh, you're Meredith, you blog. And I was like, oh,
nice.
you read it. but yeah, that's another big thing about Made in BC is getting to go to these places in BC that I probably never would have ever likely have gone to before. And they're absolutely, absolutely stunning.
It's
and
true.
The people are amazing.
Yeah, it's very true. And I think we always think, well, when we have vacation time, well, let's go away. Let's leave the province at the very least. But there's so many gems within. What were your favorite places?
Well, when we visited Smithers, we were met with a big snowfall before Halloween. So mm-hmm. that was, it's a beautiful sort of alpine town. You're at the base of the mountains. Mm-hmm. It's very pretty. And then, you know, when we arrived, there was no snow. And then all of a sudden, a foot of snow. And it was a winter wonderland before Halloween. Mm-hmm. And it was beautiful.
Well, yeah, it's really beautiful up there. Meredith, what was one of your favorite stops?
Salt Spring is definitely up there. It's just such an alive community, and it's just stunning if you've never been there before. And then Haida Gwaii from the last tour, it's like on my list for everyone. You must go there at some point in your life because it's out of this world.
I'll add it to my list. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Joyce, I just wanted to ask one last question of you.
Sure.
Sort of a broad one, but what's next for Made in BC?
Well, what's next for Made in BC? We have our next tour next fall. It's two emerging companies traveling together. It's The Response, Amber Funk Barton's company, traveling together with the 605 Collective. And if you haven't checked out Amber's work, she's actually performing next week at the Shadbolt Center. It's kind of a work in progress called Workspace. It's the 25th to the 28th. You can Google Amber Funk Barton or The Response. 605 Collective, they just did a show at the Dance Center during Dance in Vancouver. They're also performing. Anybody know when?
I'm sorry, I don't have that information.
Anyways,
And we just wanted to also mention this fabulous show that Tara Shan Friedenberg has premiered this week called Goggles. It really is a show not to be missed. It's at the Vancouver East Cultural Center this week until, I think, closing night is Saturday night, 8 p.m. And it's a piece of dance theater. It's a one-woman show, but she's actually Norman, a very troubled little boy. And it's entertaining and charming and heartfelt and poignant and really amazing. The lighting design is fabulous. James Proudfoot. The score is by Mark Stewart. And Sophie Yendel is the director. Tara's a fabulous performer, so we would all encourage you to go see that one.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations on taking dance around the province. What a fabulous project. And I do hope you all three or any of you come back with your next projects. And any last final words? No, we got it. It was goggles. I saw Meredith earlier making goggle actions with her hands. I guess we'll cover that. Okay, I think that's it for us then. And I want to thank everybody for listening. We will be back. Well, next week is Theater in the Raw with Jay Hamburger. And up next is Doug Lang with Better Days. Jerry, did you have one final comment? Nope.
The European Union Film Festival at the Cinematheque, and secondly, go online to the Push Festival, the early bird price arrangements and passes are only available for the next few days. It's a wonderful lineup, one of the best arts festivals this city has ever seen.
All right, you've been listening to the Arts Rational on 102.7 Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening, and here's a little bit more Duke Ellington since they cut him off early before.